to hear the news. Break out the booze. Our summer's no longer boring. A slash is loose, a monster ghoul, and a doll that'll rip your skin off. But if you're having a doubt, just ask aloud. The cult will tell you what we promise. The boys wear their skeletons on their sleeves, and we will give you
hot, sexy, dead summer. Hello and welcome to The Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I am Rolando.
Johnny.
And welcome to our annual summer special, Hot Sexy Death Summer 3D. This year, we will review... I feel like that sounds weird. This year, this week. This week.
I think our annually summer thing sounds weird too.
This is very anal driven, our title.
Yeah.
I don't disagree with you. It stays. Anyways, we're reviewing this week we are reviewing The House on Sorority Row. As always, John will give us the plot in five words. We'll give our first thoughts, and then we go to a spoiler analysis. But before we do that, we're gonna continue in TV Corner. We're watching Chucky season 2, episode 1, titled Halloween.
The best Halloween movie.
Halloween ever. 2. So we're continuing on season 2. We enjoy it, so it's not like we're watching it out of, you know, lack of options, which there are. But no, we've enjoyed the first season. I think I had more quibbles than you.
I went with the ride. It wasn't a blood ride, but I went the ride.
Yeah, no, everyone is a blood ride. But yeah, so we kind of pick up at least the almost like there was like a prologue or like a prologue before the proper season started, right? Like they had to end a bunch of stuff that they left open, in my opinion.
Yeah,
that's the way I would describe it. Like,
which happened very quickly, which is kind of weird. Like the dolls didn't remember who Andy was for whatever reason. I didn't understand that.
Oh yeah. So we open with where Andy is driving all of the Chucky dolls, and then Tiffany takes them hostage, which I always thought was a little weird because he seemed too willing to go along with Tiffany. He didn't try to fight back in that moment.
Yeah.
But it's fine because then they address it this episode.
It's also important to note, I think we've both been missing, in Seed of Chucky, they are making a movie. So that's why one of the kids is like, it kind of looks like that Tiffany from the movie.
I think I heard this joke. Yeah.
There's a movie that they're making, and that's where Jennifer Tilly pops up.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. And then, so wait, so who's, Chucky historian and all of this, so who's Tiffany?
I gotta mention, Tiffany is Tiffany, the Chucky's.
Her soul split, too?
I don't know about that. I'm not sure. I know she decides to go in Jennifer Tilly at some point. I do vaguely remember that. I just remember, and it was a Seed of Chucky, or was it the one before? It might have been the one before. There's a great scene where Chucky and Tiffany the doll are gonna bang, and it's all a silhouette of the dolls.
Yeah.
And Tiffany, like off screen, is going like, "Oh, Chucky, shouldn't we use protection?" And then Brad Dourif, in classic Chucky voice, goes, "Baby, I'm made of rubber." And then she gets pregnant at the end, and I think that's like the last image you're left with of her like screaming and giving birth.
Yeah.
And then Seed of Chucky happens, I think. I don't know. I don't really remember. I'm starting to realize that I haven't seen these movies in a long time.
Yeah, because I think you're describing Bride of Chucky, right? That's
from that scene, yeah. And then that's what I'm saying. At the end, she ends up being pregnant.
Yeah,
Seed of Chucky. And it is, I do vaguely remember it being just like a very fast track, like she becomes pregnant and gives birth within like a couple of days or something.
It's fine. It's made up dolls. Who gives a shit about if the, you know, cycle.
But that sounds like the perfect gift idea for a little girl, you know, because little girls don't need to all learn to have babies. And if you show them how babies are made quickly.
So, anyway, but I'm okay with that indoctrination that they put upon women. I'm okay with that.
No. So next week, our guest is going to be Andrew Tate. We're very excited to have him on the pod.
Yeah. I remember when we were a horror podcast. We've got exclusively right week. That's the part I don't, like I said, I don't know enough about Chucky. So I don't know who the fuck Tiffany is, the younger girl we've been seeing who's in this, her spirit, like Chucky's, is in this doll. And Jennifer Tilly is somehow Tiffany as well. Split. I don't know.
At some point she wanted to be human again or something, so she decided to take over Jennifer. My brain went cross-eyed right now. Sorry if that's offensive to people. Jennifer Tilly is an actor in this movie, and Tiffany decided that she wanted to be human again and just liked Jennifer Tilly and took over her body.
I almost feel like there was a joke saying that, like, she looks like Jennifer Tilly, so people confused her as Jennifer Tilly. So then she just went along with it when it was kind of like a joke, or when it was important to the plot of whatever movie that she was Jennifer Tilly. But I digress. Andy is driving these dolls, and the dolls, they have this funny little like bit where Brad Dourif is like playing three Chuckies at one time, and there's like one Chucky with like no hair, and he's like didn't get the knife either. So it's like this funny like three-way conversation between three Chuckies. And I thought that was actually probably the highlight of the episode for me, just seeing Brad Dourif play like three people, three versions of Chucky and stuff. Really well done. And he's, you know, he's not in this show, but he's like, his voice does a lot of the work, does all the work. And it's just like, it's really fun to see him just like doing something like that.
You know what's kind of worrisome? I wonder if Brad Dourif can just be like, I really want to retire officially. And touchy subject, but I'm sure they could just AI generate his voice.
I was about to say, you dare go down that road. Let that man be in peace. So he escapes. So he crashes the truck, right? Basically, but the Chuckies escape, and then we like go forward 6 months, right?
Yeah,
something like that.
Yes, but I think it suggests there aren't too many Chuckies left.
They don't know yet. We don't know. So it's like there are some, but we don't know if they all survived. But we don't know the number yet, right?
Yeah, the number. Because Chucky does mention he's going to blow himself up with the kids. And he's like, but if there aren't that many of you left, you're going to sacrifice? Like, how many of you left? He's like, oh, enough to make this worth it. And he's like willing to kill himself.
Yeah. So clearly that was the plan, to get them kind of going in that area so he can kind of plot his revenge against them. Kind of like almost, I know we're jumping ahead and stuff, but like to the end of the episode, but like that is mirroring Halloween 2, right? Because wasn't she in the hospital institution in 2? Am I crazy?
No, sorry. The second one was just the hospital.
Okay, yeah, you're right.
I think it was all different characters. I don't think... was Jamie Lee Curtis in Halloween 2? I don't think so.
Yeah, she was.
She was?
Yeah. But she was... like, she was still recovering from the events of the first movie.
That's right. And he, like...
I thought they stuck in the same morgue
in the same hospital, at the end. Yeah.
It's sort of treated that way anyways, right? Like, instead of it being in the house, it's in the hospital.
Yeah.
Institution shit. She can't escape. Which I thought was a nice circle back. Also, it could also be a reference to the fact that this is the second Halloween episode they've had.
Oh, it's true. Yeah.
So.
Oh, they also had the cold open was mirroring the classic Michael Myers POV.
Right. Yeah, for the funny joke about the little kid or whatever. But
and then it was a discount Halloween theme.
Oh, yeah.
She was like, it's cute, I guess.
just quickly mention that, what is it? Our leads, Devin and Jake, are adopted into separate families because they're orphans. I feel like that all happened very fast, but I'm just rolling with it. But yeah. But then Jake is leaving to New Jersey, which is far enough. While I believe Devin is staying in Hackensack, right? He got adopted there?
Yes, I think so. Which I thought they suggested that he was, well, I guess he was just speculating that he was probably going to have to leave Hackensack, but I think he stayed in Hackensack.
Or maybe they, because Lexi's still in Hackensack, for sure. Yeah. Because that's where they end up going. But I don't remember exactly where they said Devin was going to be, but they have that moment where we see Jake for the first time since...
I assumed it was in Hackensack because there's a moment before 6 months later happens where they're having a conversation outside and Jake's new little stepbrother or whatever is like, oh, why are they taking so long? And then he's like, oh, you know, I'd kiss you, but like, you know, they're watching.
Yeah, because he's leaving to New Jersey, Salem, New Jersey.
And then he is in the car driving away, and then Devin's like, wait, and then he runs out of the car, and then they have the most like platonic looking kiss I've ever seen in my life. Sorry, it's just I don't see this connection going.
You didn't see any passion. You didn't get a boner from this. No boners. Okay, yeah.
No good. I'm glad I wasn't the only one. Yeah,
but yeah, well, Jake looks like he's fucking 40 and a mortgage.
It's like, I don't know. This episode was fine. It's just, it got, for whatever reason, just kind of,
I feel like
dry. And then I was like, okay. I mean, the Chucky making the fertilizer bomb and ended up killing Jake's little brother or stepbrother, I thought was cool.
Thank God he's dead. Yeah, he was super annoying.
And we were talking about the parallels of like how he was super into Batman and he was always Robin, and they're kind of comparing him to Jason Todd, and then that's why he got killed off.
Right.
The fertilizer was green gas, kind of like laughing gas.
Yeah. And I thought the beginning was a little shaky. Like they spent too much time trying to over explain everything, because I felt like wherever they left it, they need to kind of quickly explain that away so they can start telling the story they wanted to tell, which was like the kids are back together and they're fighting Chucky. Kind of seems to be like the basis of it. And wasn't a huge fan of like Jake and Devin and where they where they left them, or like where they left Lexi, who in the show I thought like, okay, well, I know like we keep making jokes about them being like older and everything, but I don't know what age her character's supposed to be now, because wasn't she like in the same age group, or is she now a senior, or is she in college? It's not really explicitly say, because she's acting like an adult, like she's doing drugs, she's fucking around, but I understand that that's probably trauma from losing her dad and losing Junior.
I think
Junior.
This must be like a PTSD thing.
Yeah.
And it's also like they're in high school. I mean, she probably was doing these things casually, but they just didn't showcase it in the first season.
I feel like it's almost overdone. It's not subtle. Yeah, it's totally, very in your face, right? Yeah. So it was a little off-putting. I think it gives her character more to kind of things to do, right?
Yeah.
But
I guess, yeah.
I wasn't super like pumped about that particular storyline. I can kind of forget the no chemistry gay guys in this show, but her character, I feel like they took her too far the other way.
Which also, I'm starting to think that this is just I hear you on that. It almost feels like they're redoing everything real quick so they can set up a different thing for this season, and we got stuck with a introduction episode again.
Right.
And it was still kind of fun. I enjoyed it a bit.
No, I had moments.
Yeah. But with that said, how about I give you a nice pride joke?
Okay. It's Pride Month. Let's go.
Yes. How did the non-binary murderer kill people?
How?
They / them.
There you go. That's a good one.
And that's Chuck E.
Season 2, Episode 1. I think there's, I mean, there's a couple other things here to kind of talk about. Quickly, just referring. Thank God. I'm super happy. I feel like because no Tiffany, no Fiona, super happy they were in this episode.
Yeah.
Because I'm not exactly following or like that story. Two, I think that it would have overstuffed this episode with too much, you know? So they kind of stuck with the kids and kind of get them where they needed to go for what I'm assuming will be the remainder of the season, which is them going back to
Hackensack.
Back to Hackensack and then back to what is it, like asylum, mental institution? Oh, I should probably say not asylum, but like mental institution that was the place where Charles Lee Ray was. It was
kind of raised in an orphanage type of deal.
Raised in an orphanage. Thank you. Yeah, I couldn't figure out the word, but yeah, he's kind of, that's his origin.
Where he killed that. Well, this would be what the. Well, actually, we don't know how many people he's killed before that moment, but like young teen. Chuck. Got in a conflict with the janitor at one point in the first season, and then he was playing Peter Pan with the kids, and then he's like, come on kids, come check this out, and chopped off the janitor's hand and said, look, I found Hook, and he shoved a hook into his hand.
We gotta
remember that he gifted one of the kids the severed hand, and the kid was really into it, so I don't know if that's gonna pop up later.
I think it is. I think made the proclamation on that show as well that might pop up, but it's cool because I think now what I think might happen is that I'm assuming they're going to do flashbacks, and it's going to be specifically like during that time, because I feel like there's a lot of secrets there they can kind of reveal, because there's also, well, for one, there's all the nuns. The first nun look a little antagonistic, so she might probably is connected to Charles Lee Ray and somehow. Also, I'm suspect of the psychiatrist as well. I think that she's probably, she collects dolls, so clearly they're lacing the idea that she knows about Chucky or something.
Yes. Which I'm sure we're going to get more answers on the whole Tiffany situation. I'm going to assume next episode is kind of focusing on Tiffany.
Oh, okay.
Since there's a lot going on there, like Chucky's pissed off because now he knows that Tiffany's been sabotaging him the entire time.
Okay, yeah, that creates some stakes for their relationship. That makes sense.
And she's trying to marry a now recently quadriplegic.
Yeah.
Nika, right? Nika.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Nika. I still called her Fiona, but that's her real name.
That's a real name. Yeah.
That's actually her real name. Yeah. Still a good episode. I think that looking at this show a little more critically now, but like still fun and entertaining, has the same kind of like vibe like the first season. So still enjoying it. What about you?
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. But I'll also leave you with this. Why are LGBT people bad at quizzes? Because they can't give a straight answer. All right. No, the show's fine. I just wasn't like, this episode was okay. It just feels like a first episode again. I feel like I usually have issues with first episodes, or they're like, whoa, mind blowing. And then the middle of the series is kind of boring, and then it gets exciting again. Yeah,
I think this episode, setting it in a new area was, I think, the right decision. That's how I felt when they were all, you know, sent to that whatever institution or whatever. So I'm pretty sure it's going to be topical and deal with the boys and their homosexuality, Lexi and her drug problems. So all that's going to happen there. So it should be fun. It should be fine. Or not. I don't know. This could be the worst season ever.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, you know, it's getting accolades, right?
Yeah, it's still going. So completely going. Alrighty. You want to move on to our main review?
Yeah, it's up to you. Do you want my last joke now or at the end of the episode?
We've set back the LBGTQ far enough. Let's just keep going.
No, I got one more joke.
Do it. Go for it.
I got plenty. No, yeah. You know what? It could be a surprise at the end, right?
Okay, cool. All right, let's move over to our main review of The House on Sorority Row. John, do you want to give us the plot in 5 words?
Johnny.
5 words.
Plot summary. Rolando, drum roll, please. Sure, but let me tell you this joke. So these 3 women. I'm just kidding. All right. For House on Sorority Row, coming in at 1. Please just go home, Peter.
Mm-hmm.
Coming in at 2, Wish.com version of Black Christmas.
Yep.
And coming in at 3 for the House on Sorority Row, God damn it, Peter, go home.
It's part of our Hot Sexy Death Summer. I almost didn't see how this movie would relate to summer, but they're technically on a break.
I didn't understand.
Between they're in college, so yeah. The semester's over, but they want to stay and throw a party, which I'm assuming is during the summer. Because nothing
sure
says summer like a party in a dirty pool. Awful
lot of fall leaves, but yes, summer.
I just want to show the audience how it's tied together. It's loosely connected to our theme.
You know, honestly, I mean, sure, just make it summer because that would be the only thing that makes sense in this
movie. Well, it's not winter, right? Because it'd be like snowy and boots.
No, but I mean, it's like literally the only thing I can make sense of in this movie. No, I'll be honest. So... But I give people a little taste of what I think about it. It's not a banger. I'll say that much.
There's banging, but it's not a banger. No.
There's kind of banging.
Yeah.
And then there's a lot of, you know, I do not condone racism and I hate
the first scene they're banging. Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but sorry, go ahead. Yeah,
I don't. I hate making racial observations about things. I could not tell any of these white women apart for pretty much the entire movie. And then every time somebody would die, right, which always happened most of the time, it happened off screen. I would forget who died and, in fact, who that person was to begin with. I was in a movie with one of these actresses, obviously not during this time. And I was super excited to keep looking for her, and I was like, I don't know which one she is.
Yeah, she has a very small part in this. Harley Jean Kozak. She had a very small part in this. She just kind of
Diane
dies and goes away.
Oh, wait, does she?
Yeah, she's like the first one to die.
Wow, spoilers.
As well.
She's actually like the third or fourth one to die. Third.
Oh, I thought she was the first one.
First person got... I don't remember how these people die. But a lot of like this weird cane that's somehow super sharp. I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah.
How did you feel about it?
I was pretty indifferent to it. I'm perfectly fine... I had the same problems as you. I could not tell any of these women apart. I didn't know any of their names. You can tell any of them apart. I was just kind of just going for the ride, which is fine because this is just like a pretty generic slasher movie. So it's fine. These girls are going to die. I did enjoy some of their deaths, and I did like the, they tried really hard to make the last bit kind of like a psychological drama terror moment.
That part was kind of cool. Yeah,
they're like doing stuff with the lights and she's like on drugs and so she's like seeing shit, and like I thought that part was fine. I enjoyed it. As far as everything else, as far as the story, what I can gather is pretty straightforward. Like, there really was no...
I mean, it was straightforward. It was just like nothing in this movie was earned. I think what was bugging me,
you know, like it's exactly,
it was just happening, and I was like, okay.
It's kind of like, I Know What You Did Last Summer. That's when I saw this movie, I was like, it's kind of like that, but only it didn't take, there wasn't like a year in between. It's like a little bit, yeah. I Know What You Did Last Summer and a little bit of Black Christmas, kind of all mushed together.
Felt like a lot of like Black Christmas. It almost felt like the same storyline.
Yeah,
killer's been living in the attic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, killer is somebody that potentially was like a botched birth. Like, you know, the thing is, like, you actually get to see this killer, and I swear I thought like, oh, this person's wearing a mask. No, it was just shitty makeup. Like, I don't mean to crap all over the makeup team on this, but everything looked really bad.
It's very low budget. Yeah.
But then the score was really fucking great. Like, I felt like that was saving the movie because it was highly cinematic. And I was like, this is cool.
I agree with that, actually. I thought the score was nice.
And did you know they remade this?
What?
It's called Sorority Row. And it came out in 2009.
I think I remember that.
And it's somebody stayed... from the original cast, I think, came back for the movie. Carrie Fisher's in this remake of the movie, by the way.
Huh.
I don't remember. I was reading something about it, and I was like, oh, interesting. I'm going to assume it wasn't a banger either.
Why is Rumor Williams is in this?
Yeah. I don't know. I guess if you want us to review that movie too, let us know in the comments below.
No, I think I'm done with the cinematic universe. Sorority Row, cinematic universe. I think I've got my fill.
Just let us know in the comments below.
I know Jamie Chung. She played Claire.
So I think the guy that wrote and directed this movie had his hand in the remake too. Like, they asked him to come back and do some stuff.
I don't blame him, because I mean, you could really, like, it's such a like paper thin story, you can kind of put that against any movie, to where a remake makes complete sense. Or not really a remake. Yeah, I guess it is a remake, right? Like a retelling. Yeah. Remake. I don't know, I was tripping up on those words, but yeah, like, you can kind of modernize the story because it's so like easy to copy. Does that make sense? Like, this is so...
could have been written on a post-it note, and they're like, we're gonna roll with this.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I get what you're saying. It was fine. It's just... when I'm saying I couldn't follow the story, I meant, like, I could not, for the life of me,
engage
wrap my head
it.
Around... Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, not just engage with it, but I couldn't wrap my head around, like... okay, who just died? Like, every single time.
Yeah. It was,
and then I would rewind a little bit. I'm like, I still don't know who that is. I know they're in the group together. I just don't know who that is.
Yeah, yeah. Like, if you just read, like, the plot description of that 2009, it pretty much lays out the whole story. Like, group of sorority sisters try to cover up the death of their house sister after a prank gone wrong, only to be stalked by a serial killer.
And no, it's not Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead.
Yeah, it's just like...
and that's some of the reveals of, like, how the girls died are real goofy. like, a couple of people die, and they kind of... you see one thing happen, and then they mostly die off screen. And then they show up because the killer decided to drag the bodies into that pool and throw them in there. Well, I was like, okay. Like, the killer is very active in this movie for big reveals and scares, which, you know, if you try to reason with it, it doesn't make any sense.
I would, like, also...
killer cuts off somebody's head and puts it in a toilet.
Which was that was actually a nice scene. Yeah. I would say some of the deaths are pretty good. Yeah. Pretty some, like,
but you don't see that part. I think she dies off screen, and then...
she runs into the bathroom with the head in it, the main actress, I think, right?
And, Hero, just a little, let me intervene real quick and say, everybody don't listen to the last 10 minutes. We will explain further in spoilers. Unless the spoiler is who the killer is. I don't know. Because we just talk about how they're all dying.
I mean, it's a slasher movie. You don't know who they are. The audience doesn't know who they are. So nobody, how's that a spoiler?
That's true. Yeah, to be fair, I still don't know who they are. And I've seen the movie almost twice because I had to rewatch a bunch of it.
I mean, I would just say a lot of the murders were good. How about that? Vaguely. There were a lot of murders. It's a slasher movie. Come on. That's not a spoiler, right? Like,
I think my favorite part, though, is the, you know, I'm always picking at the logic.
Right.
And how they're fully aware that they think, well, they are aware somebody is maybe killing them off.
Mm-hmm.
And every time they're about to call the cops, they're like, no, because we're still trying to cover up that we killed somebody else by accident. Or, you know, that's not a spoiler. It's a plot. We accidentally killed the house mother. And I was like, no, dog, like, you're getting killed. Just fucking tell somebody. Like, you're going to die or you're going to live, like, and go to jail, I guess. I don't know.
I would say this is I know we're kind of, like, going back and forth, but I'll make an argument that one thing I did like about this movie is that the girls, our leads, do something wrong and they kind of pay for it, which is, I actually think that's a good horror trope. You know what I mean? Like in, for example, like Sinister, Ethan Hawke does something wrong, but then he kind of pays for it. Or Drag Me to Hell is another example.
That's right.
She does something wrong and then she pays for it. So it's kind of like these kids do something immature and wrong. And actually a few of the other actresses were like vividly trying to like acting villainous and trying to like stop. They were trying to like stop the other, some of the other girls with consciousness trying to like, we can't go to the cops, but we got a party and stuff like that. So it's kind of, it's kind of like, they're all kind of in a way, they do have that moral ground where like these girls are going to pay for what they did and stuff like that. An eye for an eye thing.
Yes. Can we, okay. At 1:34.
Am I pausing?
Yeah, because your mic sounded like it went out and then it went to computer again. Mic. Is that cool? I think you're back, though.
Okay.
There you go, yeah. It was doing some weird thing where it echoed out and it sounded like it was a computer mic for a second, then it came back.
Do you have any other thoughts? Or is this going to be a quick episode? Did it, though?
Yeah, it's cool. I didn't stop recording, I'm sorry. But yeah, 1:34. shit. Oh, wait. No, some more stuff happened. This killer, they did a Norma Bates thing. I don't know if that's a spoiler. And this killer, the house mother had a cane, and this killer's using the cane to murder everybody for the most part. There is one part where he slashes somebody's neck with the claw side of a hammer, which I was like, that's a cool idea.
Yes, thank you.
I think if somebody did try to do that, it would be way more graphic than that. But it was pretty cool. There's a character named Peter. Actually, I should explain my 5-word plot summaries. There's a character named Peter that I think is kind of the boyfriend of our main character, who is, again, I couldn't wrap my head around who was who. And she's constantly like, hey, you just need to go home. That's what I was like, maybe not constantly, but it felt like that. Like, hey, just go home. And he's like, oh, okay. And then what, like, he eventually does leave and he passes out in his fucking car because he's drunk. And then like he wakes up, he's like, oh, and he like wanders into the house and ruins something that somebody was trying to plan to catch the killer. Mm-hmm. Now Peter's probably I'm assuming gonna die because this doesn't have the most satisfying ending.
I know, we're like, I don't know what else to say about this movie. Sorry, let's talk about like
your face,
the death,
like,
and like
horror trope
with the mystery in quotations. You guys can't see it, but I'm doing air quotations of the killer.
I sense Rolando wants to go into spoilers. Okay, let's go into spoilers.
Yeah.
There was a lot of... there was a big insistence of... Probably using the word poorly right now. We're both tired, by the way. They needed this pool to be murky green and she dirty for whatever reason. And it is an ongoing thing throughout this movie. And by God, do they use the shit out of this fucking pool. it seems like for a minute there, I was like, oh man, we haven't seen the pool in like 10 minutes. Oh, there it is.
I don't have to answer to you.
Yeah. It's like, oh no, the lady, which, you know, the house mother, who is doing nothing wrong. She's just like, I close the place down every June 19th. It just is what it is. I do it every year. I've been doing this every year. And the girls are like, nah, like, we want a party. And they're like, you're not going to fucking drink in my house. Like she was pissed. She didn't curse, but she was like pissed. And she's like, I also want you guys gone tomorrow. Exactly. And they're like, hey, where's that other chick? And they're like, oh, we don't know. And then she like walks in on her about to bang. And she's like, not in my house. And the sorority girl gets all pissed off and like, you bitch, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no, dude, like, there's fucking rules. Like, stop. Why are these people so obnoxious? So I guess they're trying to set up like it's okay that they mostly all die. Actually, they all die, right? Spoiler, sorry. We didn't actually go into spoiler.
No.
Did we?
Did we? I don't think I said it.
Spoilers. Okay, there it is.
No spoilers. I won't put the spoiler warning.
Okay.
So just be warned. If this goes point forward, there will both be spoilers.
So, like, she sets up the scene music, to teach her a lesson.
Bumper. Right? Yeah.
Like, no, it's just spoiler. This is a summer edition, goddammit. You do things different. hey, is this movie set during the summer? Yes.
Yeah, as far as
end
we can tell.
End of discussion.
Oh, we didn't even talk about the cool band.
Oh, yes, which I looked it up, and that was actually a local band to that area. That they sounded super like Oingo Boingo, right? Like,
very, yeah. They had a cool, like, late 70s, early 80s sound.
I did enjoy them, yeah.
They were fun, yeah. I was actually super happy anytime they cut back to them, because they do a couple of songs. And I was like...
Yeah.
That's probably one of my favorite things is watching of the era bands play in movies.
Yeah. So
it's be like, great. I've never heard of this fucking band. It could be, they could be fake for all I know. I have no idea. It's excellent. But this band I did enjoy. Even in Prowler too, wasn't there like a cool band in Prowler and the Rose? There's a couple of cool bands in well, for sure the Rose. But
also, yeah, who the hell is Lois Kelsey? I forgot that one of these people was completely ADR to have a different voice because the director preferred a different... Oh, Mrs. Slater, the house mother.
So, I was going to bring up... So you said you had issues with the audio, right?
Yeah, it was weird. Like, they were trying to do, like... It got... I'm going to be a little nerdy about this. It sounded like they tried to upload this movie at some point and try to mix the audio into stereo for whatever reason, and then it double stereoed so it sounded echoey, and that's what I was hearing, like, because I was hearing both sides on each of the speakers separately or something like that. But then it was only for that part, because I think all the audio and stuff is all mono, so it didn't affect that, so that sounded fine. It's just every once in a while
I texted me that earlier this week, so I watched it. I was already planning actually to watch it on Shudder, so I watched it on Shudder. But I watched this on my iPad with my headphones.
Oh, okay.
And I did hear a lot of the same issues. It was kind of like, it seemed like badly recorded audio on the day more.
Okay.
Then that's what I gathered, because I did hear all the low echoes.
Yeah, like, it's weird
in it, and so like it is a little like, because it has that like very, it's very early 80s cinematography shots, everything of the time, very common of the time, but then you have like that weird audio, which I found to be very dissociating in the beginning, because it's like, I don't know what's going on anymore. Like, these are just audio is not syncing up. This image is not like the best, and it was a little like, it disconnects for me from the movie when it's done that way. So I had a minute. It had to take a minute to kind of figure out what was this movie. But yes, that is something you probably should tell people. The audio is not particularly good. It wasn't good for on Shudder, and it wasn't good for you either. You said you saw it on Prime, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So,
but with that said, I didn't catch that the house mother's voice was completely dubbed.
Yeah, I didn't catch that either. So that's actually probably pretty good ADR then. Yeah,
that's probably the one thing that they were able to fix in post, because apparently the lady that played Miss Slater, her voice was kind of high pitched. That apparently the director liked her look, she thought it was perfect for that role, but ultimately didn't like the way she sounded. So he had somebody come in and ADR that huskier voice.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also important to note that Quentin Tarantino picked this for the first Quentin Tarantino Film Fest in Austin in 1996.
QT Fest?
Mm-hmm. The QT Fest for the cuties.
Okay.
The band is...
He would like this movie. He totally would like this movie. It's like...
the band is called 4 out of 5 Doctors, and they were a local popular band, power pop band in Washington, D.C. area. They were short-lived.
Yeah, I think I'm also seeing that Riff Tracks.
Oh.
Sort of mystery, sort of offshoot of, what is it, some of the guys from like Mystery Science Theater, right? Like they did a Riff Track on this.
Oh, okay. That sounds like fun to maybe, well, I don't know. I didn't enjoy this movie that much. I mean, I'll let you know later when I read it. Also, Mark Rossman, the director and writer of this film, has kept the cane and music box from the movie. Super.
Oh, so he stole from production.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah. All right.
He's a stand-up guy.
Thanks, Mark.
Harley Jane Kozak was still working as a waitress in New York City while making this movie.
Yeah, that makes sense. She has a super small part in this. It's not... Yeah, it's not that... memorable.
The set was visited by Baltimore underground filmmaker John Waters. These are the interesting things about this.
What is this shit?
The bathroom scenes were shot at the Baltimore School of Dentistry because the sorority house didn't have a communal bathroom.
Ah,
as you know, which makes total sense now that I think about it. Why the fuck would there be a communal bathroom in a house like that? What a weird thing to do. Oh, wow. That just makes it like not... Now my mind is blown by the schematics of this house. I don't understand it.
Right, yeah.
There's like a balcony that at the end that she walks towards and she looks down, and I couldn't help but think they shot that at the ground level because the balcony didn't look like a second story balcony.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And it looked like a set.
Yeah, or it looked
something
like...
Something built.
Like they... walked out into just like a back little patio area and then had everything dark and told her to just keep looking down like there's something below her. I was like, okay. But luckily they cut away to a shot of the pool also, because I was worried about the pool when that moment happened, because I hadn't seen the pool in like 2 minutes. I'm not exaggerating when I say they cut to this fucking pool for almost everything. There's even a part in the movie where I think one girl gets murdered by the pool to show the pool, and then shortly thereafter a bunch of dudes jump or get into their tidy whities and are going to jump into the pool again to showcase the pool. I think this was Night Swim.
Yeah, you have that funny joke with the chubby guy jumping in and saying he's a sea pig.
Yeah, it was really good.
They made that joke not once, not twice. I think they made it three times, that joke. They're very proud with that joke.
Yeah. Mark Rossman's got some zingers. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, I mean, and he's a thief and zingers. And so, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to say about this movie.
The reveal. The reveal is there's a cold open that we never mentioned, where this woman is giving birth to some child and you're like, no, it's not good, whatever. So the child goes away, or we assume
presumably dies at birth, right? Yeah.
And I didn't even think it was like I don't know if they were trying to suggest like, oh, hey, we don't know who these people are, but I automatically was like, oh, that's the house mother, right? And then they kind of showcase it throughout the thing. And then something about the doctor that they end up calling because there's a like a tag bracelet, sort of like a dog collar bracelet style thing that says call this in an emergency or something like that. I was like, what? So I'm assuming this fell off of our killer is my guess. Right. I don't know. And this doctor goes and then you realize that the doctor is being a bad guy too because he's trying to cover up the fact that just cut me off if I'm wrong. He was injecting some sort of experimental drug into women.
Yes.
And this boy survived and he's trying to catch the boy because the, or now an adult man has been killing all these girls.
Mm-hmm.
Because presumably he's been living in the attic and saw them do the entire thing and kill his mom. So it's not like this guy's doing the wrong thing. Because he doesn't kill anybody that is not a part of the sorority girls, right?
He kills the... I thought he was the only killer. He killed everybody, including the sorority girls.
No, but I mean, I don't think he kills anybody outside of the sorority girls, right? Except for the doctor.
Mrs. Slater, he kills a party guest. There's a... Stevie, Morgan, Diane, Jean, Liz, Vicky, Dr. Nelson Beck. Those are the people that died. There's a body count.
Oh, okay.
List on our notes.
Well, anyway, yeah, so he's targeting sorority girls because they killed. I mean, there was also like at one point whenever the house mother dies, it kind of looks like there's like 30 people watching this happen. Even though I know it's just sorority girls, but I'm like, who are all these people?
So I would say the vast majority of the sorority girls, plus a few party guests and the doctor and the first, the house mother, die.
I think they all die except for the person that's supposed to be a protagonist.
Right. Catherine is what it says here.
Yeah. Which I thought it's kind of a lame ending. I said, Peter comes back because he like woke up from his thing. The doctor accidentally shoots him with the trank and he passes out on the ground. And then our Catherine, whatever, runs away, even though she's in a drug-induced sedative state. And right after that is when the killer comes in and kills the doctor in a pretty cool way. But the thing is, she's able to run away from the killer and... she realizes she can't jump down from the balcony. That's clearly not a balcony. And so she decides to climb up because that's just what horror movies do, right? I'm not going to try to figure that one out. That's just what everybody does. She climbs up to the attic where she knows that's where the kid was hanging out.
Right. Yeah.
And then she's there like, oh, what do we do? And then the killer had time to run up there and change into a jester outfit that looks like the jester that comes out of the music box.
Which I thought was pretty scary.
That was pretty cool. I'm just saying like, yeah. He like, teleported up there and got all done up and sat in a corner.
Movie's got a movie.
No, I'm telling you, he's impressive is what I'm trying to tell you. He's got some, he knows how to be dramatic.
And he lives in an attic. He's like Quasimodo up there.
He just like spent like 20 years thinking like, if I was going to kill a bunch of people, how would I do it? Ooh, you know, it's a good one. I'm going to dress like this thing, this music box. So he went out of his way at night to go buy materials and sell himself a costumed fit, and it was pretty impressive.
You know, I do mostly hate that idea that like our killer is like OP'd, you know?
Yeah,
he's like super overpowered. He can do all these like fantastical things and survive many either stab gunshots, because the lady like filled out a full clip and didn't even hit him.
No, so I chalked that up to
fake.
I chalked that up to at the beginning when she's like trying to aim or whatever. She's terrible at hitting anything. You remember? And then she accidentally shoots the house mother. Like, that's what happened.
Well, thank God they plotted that early in the movie. Yeah, yeah. Look at these guys.
I just assume, like, okay, she can't fucking hit her shots and she's on a sedative. I don't know. Whatever.
I don't know. You sure? Yeah. Oh, my God.
But,
okay.
But she remembered that one of the dolls is a knife, I guess. I don't remember how she knew that.
When she visited up in the attic, yeah.
Oh, okay. And then she stabs him. And then stabs him in the neck, and he falls out of the attic. And then she's like relieved because, oh, he's dead. And this all happens within like a minute and a half, I think. And then it cuts back down to him, and then his eyes open. End of movie.
Yeah.
Which is kind of lackluster.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see people liking this movie.
Yeah, sure.
I don't think we didn't connect with it.
No, I don't think so.
It could have been our viewing experience.
Like, I feel like this was on the same level as, like, Prowler, but I did enjoy Prowler more.
Prowler, I thought it had a good, like, there was some nice, everything made sense, if I can say so. And the deaths were more elaborate, more violent.
Yeah.
So it was kind of easier to kind of track. We kind of knew where we were at all points. Yeah. I mean, I think if you were to watch this, I think some people would probably like this because it's very, like, generic, stereotypical. So it's very easy to like.
Yeah.
Because the story's pretty straightforward. It's not, like, complicated at all. You know, not so much of a mystery.
See people trying to latch onto this, like, a cult film sort of deal.
Right. Yeah. Not us. We didn't connect.
Which I'll tell people, I am a fan of Slumber Party Massacre. I do like those movies. I think they're corny as hell, but they're fun.
Right, yeah. Alrighty. I think we've gone on long enough. Let's rate it. You ready to rate it?
Yes.
Alright. John, how many sexy spooky bones do you want to give it?
How many sexy spooky bones will you give it?
Sexy bones.
Well, I know what you need.
Show us your
sexy spooky bones.
No, wait, don't do that. Just rate the movie.
I'm going to give The House on Sorority Row 4 sexy spooky bones.
Oh man, I would say 3 is about right. Yeah. What did I give? There's no way of knowing this, but what did I give Summer of 84? Did I give it a 2? 3?
I don't remember. I know I liked it a lot more than you did.
Yeah. I just had more problems with it. I just can feel the... I did not vibe at all with that movie. That's an easier way to put it. Same thing with this movie. I was not particularly invested in this movie either. No. So I'll give it a 3.
I'll give it a 4 because I can see its influence maybe on great filmmakers. Quentin Tarantino. Cutie fans.
Oh,
just kidding.
That's your opinion of a great filmmaker. Interesting. Very interesting.
It's a joke. Sorry, Quentin.
You suck. Alrighty.
Let me let you know. What were you going to say?
No, I was about to end the show. Go ahead.
Okay, no, go ahead. Go ahead and end it.
Oh, what were you going to let me know? Something you're going to let me know off air?
No, it's all right. I'll tell you right now.
Okay, I'm going to end the show so I can find out what's going on. All right, guys, gals, non-binary pals, thank you for listening. And as always,
stay on the air for a second because I got one more joke for you.
That's right.
There's these three women, right? And this guy goes up to them and asks each of them, like, hey, so what are you guys most proud of in your life? And each of them say, oh, well, my son. He's like, oh, each of you are proud of your individual sons? They're like, yes, of course. So he asks the first lady, well, what is it about your son you're very proud of? And she says, oh, well, you know, he's just like a brilliant, brilliant doctor and just wildly successful. And he saved so many lives. He's gone through a lot of heartbreak with his job. But he's also like the guy that everybody seeks out in case, you know, something major happens. And he gets paid very well. Say, all right, cool. That's you know, understandable. Well, what about you, man? What are you most proud of about your son? She goes, well, my son is like the premier lawyer of the country. He is, you know, prolific, and he's had a lot of high caliber cases, and he's won all of them, and he makes so much money as well. I'm just so proud of him. He goes, well, okay, understandable also. Well, you, ma'am, how about your son? Oh, my son's a homosexual. Okay, I'm sure you can be proud of that. That's great. That's a good thing. But how? What does he do for work? I mean, is that what the only reason you're proud of him? She goes, no. He does really well. You know, he shacks up with this lawyer and this doctor, and they just, you know, take care of him. That's my joke. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you stayed and you hated it. The joke is they're all gay.
They're all gay. And on that note,
stay spooky. Together.